Now we're going to have a conversation with Jimmy Argiers, as we all know him. He's been so central to the medical community here in neurosurgery and actually for his impact on the hospital in so many ways. Jimmy, let me just, of course, welcome you here and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And just as a background, just tell us quickly about your training and when you first came to Lancaster. And, of course, I don't have to ask you why you came to Lancaster. You grew up in Lancaster, I know.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Well, I graduated from Westchester State Teachers College. And then I proceeded with the year of graduate work at the University of Pennsylvania. And then I was a physical therapist at the University Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, for about a year and a half, at which time I was approached by a few physicians to enter medical school. And with their assistance, I attended the medical college of the University of Alabama, graduated there with my MD degree. Then I had a straight medical internship at the University of Tennessee. And then I went on into a six-year residency, of which most of it was neurosurgical, but I had a year of general surgery and a year of neurology in with that 6 years.
And that was in Birmingham?
In Birmingham, Alabama.
So then you came back to Lancaster in what year?
And I came to Lancaster in December 67.
Of course, I know, but perhaps the audience doesn't, that there was already someone here who was really a towering figure in neurosurgery.
Dr. John Polson was here. He was one of the three neurosurgeons in this central part of the state. And then there was Larry Lawrence Adams here, but Dr. Polson was the eminent neurosurgeon of the area, and he had a profound reputation out of Yale University. He came here, and actually he stopped here on his way back to New Haven, Connecticut, because he liked the area. And while he was here, he mentioned to a few of the major figures, medical figures here in Lancaster, that he would like to start up a neurosurgical practice here in Lancaster, but they told him that there was no need for a neurosurgeon here. And of course, that inflamed him to the point where he just stayed. And then from that moment on, the program began and developed.
So when did he come?
He came about the mid-1950s, I would say 54.
Now, when you joined him, was he alone in
he
practice?
He was alone. He had an association with Dr. Adams, but he didn't find him to be a partner that he would want to be with. And then he, for a short period of time, perhaps a year or less, he had developed a partnership with Dr. Tom Stewart, another very fine neurologist who we had at that time here. Mm-hmm. It did it for coverage purposes, but then it never worked mm-hmm. out well because mm-hmm. surgeons with internists and medical right. people are just difficult to, you know, combine in a practice. John died in 1976, right. had an abrupt demise, most likely related to coronary.
Was working right up until his death.
Oh, he was working right up to that happened. That happened at his home in the swimming pool.
Now, by that time, how many were in your group?
Just two of us.
Still?
Oh, two of us, and we had hired Dan Good about 6 to 7 months prior to that incident.
How big is the group now?
The group today is, there are 10 physicians, 7 neurosurgeons, 6 active, and 1 myself, in a consulting status, and then there are 3 interventional physiatrists who we use for pain management and interventional procedures.
Incredible.
We have 94 employees.
And I mean, we have to say it has to be very gratifying to you that one of those 7 is also named Argiers.
Oh, it is. That's actually a privilege to have your child in with you, you know.
And he also trained in Alabama.
He trained in Alabama, correct.
Yeah. Well, this is all very interesting, but I think the audience would like to hear a little bit more about the things that you found in this community in terms of the hospital environment. And at that time, I think we all know that what was then St. Joseph Hospital, which is now regional, was fully the equivalent of Lancaster General Hospital. And yet, today, I don't think even their staunchest advocates would try to convince anyone that the two hospitals are equal. I mean, Lancaster General Hospital has just taken off on an entirely different trajectory. And I just would like to ask you, as someone who has been here observing that transformation, to tell us as a surgical specialist in one of the most rarefied specialties. What do you think is it that accounts for the different paths that these two hospitals went on?
It was clearly noted that the two hospitals were comparable when I first arrived, and I would say the St. Joseph Hospital was every bit as comparable as Lancaster General. The difference began to occur as the youthful physicians came in. There were already very talented physicians here, I mean, above excellence. I mean, John Polson, Dick Mann, there were the Atleys, Dr. Farmer, all these men were above par. And they began to attract younger people to come. And as these specialties began to notice there was a need here, men began migrating in here, bringing in their visions of how the medical practices should grow.
I've heard you use the expression, talent attracts talent.
Talent attracts talent. Yeah. That's exactly right. So, well, you know that yourself, you know, as you brought your good people in. So what happened was that the St. Joseph's Hospital was not as innovative as the Lancaster General Hospital. I guess the board were a bit more restricted in the way they wanted to grow, whereas this hospital became more wide-opened and visionary about how to take this building forward. So they began to take the specialties and focused on the specialties and gave them total support. Radiologically, operating rooms, you know, equipment, and so on. And that was not happening at St. Joseph's. So the triad of a visionary administration, of committed employees, and a talented medical staff, that triad brought success to Lancaster General Hospital in those years and continues to do that.
You were here, I guess, before Paul Waddell came?
I was here when Paul Waddell was here.
When he came. Right.
And he was a dynamite administrator who solidified the number one position for this hospital in the area.
The relationship between the medical staff and the administration, when I came here in 1983, it seemed to me that there was some tension. And yet, that doesn't seem to have inhibited the development of the institution at all. But maybe it was a healthy tension.
There was a healthy tension. I think there was a feeling many times that the administration was somewhat restricted about how far they wanted to go with certain issues, you know, certain programs, certain specialties. But I believe as the years went by, they began to recognize that everyone in the country was moving in the direction of specialty medicine and taking it to the next level. I think Paul Waddell began to understand that the openings were towards the specialties at that point. One of the major steps that this hospital took that enhanced its position in central Pennsylvania was the development of the residency program. And Dick Mann and Nikita Zervanos and several of us supported educational process. Now, as a matter of fact, there was even a move to dismiss the School of Nursing way back, late 60s or early 70s, where at one of our staff meetings was suggested that we close the School of Nursing, and several of us stood up and fought that issue. The specialties actually drove the program. Well, look what the heart program did.
The other thing I think that is so interesting to me, again, I'm a specialist like you, is the fact that there is still a good integration in the community with the family physicians. And I think perhaps that is because of the residency being in the hospital, and so many of the residents do go out and practice in this community, so that they get their training here, they know the specialists even when they're residents,
and
that gives them a feeling of being part of the hospital, even though most of them don't practice much in the hospital, if at all.
I recall in the first year I was here, we had no interns. They lost every one of them. And so we went on a program of trying to enlist interns out of the surrounding universities. So a group of us would get in a van on weekends and would drive down to Temple and Jefferson and Hahnemann and all the surrounding schools to try to develop an interest for these young people to come to Lancaster. So we would offer them beer and peanuts and things of that sort and have some fun together and then promote the hospital. And then that's how we began the process of bringing back the young people, and then the residency program grew from that.
Well, I think you have a visionary administration, you have a young and talented medical staff, you have a residency in family practice, and you have a nursing school. Those are all
the ingredients of
key
success.
Ingredients. Yeah. Now I'm going to ask you a final question. It's the same question I asked Dick Weber. It seems to me that there's a trend towards hiring full-time people to direct certain programs within the hospital. And the hospital obviously already employs people within the Lancaster General Medical Group structure that they've bought certain practices. Do you see that as something that is sort of the next step, or is it something that will create more tension between the medical staff and the hospital?
I think, handled correctly, that it will not develop tension.
I'm thinking of a program like oncology, where you have private practitioners, but you want to develop a programmatic style of practice.
I think bringing in an oncologist, as we have here recently, is a big step forward. That's going to raise the level of medical practice in that discipline.
You look at the trends and among the institutions that are large, nationally recognized institutions, there is more and more a tendency in order to compete with the university hospitals where everybody is in that kind of an arrangement. The community hospitals are doing more and more of that.
And I think Lancaster General Hospital has handled that issue rather well.
That's a very good note on which to end. And again, I want to thank you for bringing your experience and wisdom and perspective to us.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this issue. We hope you've enjoyed these interviews. And as always, we welcome your feedback and encourage you to write, call, or email me or our managing editor, Gina Bissett. You'll find contact information on the contents page of the print journal. I'd also like to remind you that all these interviews are archived on our website at www.jlgh.org. They can be listened to there or downloaded to your computer or iPod. Our next issue will appear in December, and we have already lined up a group of articles that I think you will find stimulating and informative. Until then, this is Larry Bonchek, thanking you for listening and wishing you all the best until next time.